Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am happy to be with you again on this 18th Sunday after Pentecost, September 23rd, 2018. Hope you have had a good weekend so far. Hope you found an opportunity to worship this morning, whatever that looks like for you. So it is the 18th Sunday after Pentecost. As I said, we are continuing to work our way through this very long season of Pentecost or after Pentecost, and eventually we'll get to something else, but it's not going to be for a while. And it's just here and there we'll have things like All Saints Day and a couple other things, and then finally we'll get to Advent, which is my favorite. But that is not for a few more months. So we are continuing through this Pentecost season, the green season, if you are a member of a liturgical church that that changes the colors according to what season it is. So maybe the cloth on the altar or the paraments, they're called paraments. Maybe something on the pulpit, depending on what your church looks like. There's often, it's the green season. So there's a lot of green. And if green's your favorite color, that works out really well. Anyway, 18th Sunday after Pentecost, we will be talking today about the Old Testament text assigned for this Sunday. And I haven't done this for a while, so I'll just throw it out there for anybody who might be listening. We base this podcast on the lectionary texts assigned for each Sunday. Now, if you're not familiar with the term lectionary, the lectionary is a three-year cycle of Bible readings that certain churches use. And so, as I said, it's a three-year cycle. Each year, we're in year B right now, which is the Gospel of Mark. So it focuses on the Gospel of Mark, although it brings in the Gospel of John. Each year brings in the Gospel of John. John doesn't have a specific year. So then once Advent hits, we'll change to year C, three-year repeating cycle of texts. And that is what is read in church on Sunday and often what the pastor or priest will preach on. Not always, and there are alternatives. But for me, rather than trying to choose texts every week, I've always been appreciative of the lectionary cycle. So just in case I haven't said that in a while, but just in case you're a newer listener and you wondered why I keep talking about 18th Sunday after Pentecost or, you know, the colors, well, there's a cycle, and I belong to a tradition that goes with that cycle. So we are actually I'm Lutheran, so I use the Lutheran lectionary cycle, which is pretty much the same as the Roman Catholic and the Episcopal, with a few minor changes here and there. And I'm not sure about some other denominations that use the lectionary, if they are basically the same or slightly different. So I haven't done much research on that, but that's probably enough about that. Let's start looking at some texts, shall we? So as I said, we'll be looking at the Old Testament texts today, and then on Wednesday's episode, we will switch to the New Testament texts. The first Old Testament text assigned to us for this Sunday comes from Jeremiah chapter 11, verses 18 through 20, and those verses are as follows. It was the Lord who made it known to me, and I knew. Then you showed me their evil deeds. But I was like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter, and I did not know it was against me that they devised the schemes, saying, let us destroy the tree with its fruit, let us cut him off from the land of the living, so that his name will no longer be remembered. But you, O Lord of hosts, who judge righteously, who try the heart and the mind, let me see your retribution upon them, for to you I have committed my cause. Again, that is Jeremiah chapter 11, verses 18 through 20. And what jumps out at me is that even though this is Jeremiah rather than Isaiah, we read from Isaiah last week, if you remember, and talked about the suffering servant poems. This reminds me a lot of that, the gentle lamb led to the slaughter, etc. And it makes sense to me. I'm always trying to figure out, you know, why the people who put together the lectionary put certain texts with other texts. And if you listen to last Wednesday's episode, you might remember that the text we read from the Gospel of Mark was right in the middle, in a lot of ways, of the Gospel of Mark, pretty much right in the middle in terms of number of chapters and verses. But also, it was a turning point in the Gospel of Mark, moving away from Jesus's time teaching and preaching and healing, etc., to him turning toward Jerusalem. So he's really starting to try to prepare his disciples for what is to come. And so it makes sense to me that we're pairing these Old Testament texts that have those suffering servant themes with Jesus turning his face towards Jerusalem as we read through the Gospel of Mark. Now, not sure what else might have jumped out at you from, you know, it's not a long text, only three verses, but for me, that was what jumped out at me. So let's go ahead and turn to some commentary for this text. This week, our commentary comes from Michael L. Ruffin, and he is the editor of Connections, Smythe, and Helwys Publishing, Macon, Georgia. And just like last week, I don't know that I pronounced that correctly. I apologize, but yeah. So he says that Jeremiah proclaimed a message with implications for all of Judah and for everyone in Jerusalem. Active during the last part of the 7th and early part of the 6th century BCE, he was witness to the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem. So that's important because that places Jeremiah and this text into the context of history. He witnessed the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem. That was a huge moment in Jewish history and the history of Israel. Jeremiah proclaimed the coming Babylonian invasion of Judah as God's judgment and encouraged the people to submit to it. And he paid a high price for such preaching. We have talked about Jeremiah before, and if you've read through the book of Jeremiah, you know that he often, maybe not laments, but comments on, no, sometimes there's lamenting and sometimes there's just commenting on the fact that he is a prophet of God and he has said what God told him to say, and he has paid a very high price for saying what God has told him to say. And he's living with those consequences, but whether he's lamenting or whether he's commenting on it, it's like, well, okay, so I did what you told me, and these have been the results. So the commentator says that we actually need to read all of Jeremiah 11 to experience the full power of the assigned reading. So that may be something that you want to do if you want to pause this podcast and go read the full chapter. I won't read the entire thing here on the podcast. But if you want to pause and go read Jeremiah 11, that might be helpful. He goes on to say that the Lord tells Jeremiah to preach to the people of Judah and Jerusalem about the covenant that had been in force for 6 centuries. The people had repeatedly proven unfaithful throughout Israel's history. Now, continuing unfaithfulness to the covenant meant that judgment was coming. And if you've listened to me before, if you've read through the Old Testament, then you know that the people are always unfaithful to the covenant that God has made with them. God keeps trying. God is trying so hard to be in relationship with, not, you know, with the Israelites, because that's who we're talking about in the Old Testament, but with all of us, right? God tries so hard to be in relationship with us, continually making new covenants, trying everything that God can think of, finally culminating in the coming of Jesus, right? And so now the lectionary text, these three verses that we read, focus on the threats Jeremiah is receiving because of his proclamation of God's impending judgment against Judah and Jerusalem. The matter the prophet addresses is thus very personal. He is under attack to the point that his very life is at risk. Life was not easy for Jeremiah. He did not have an easy go of it. I don't blame the Old Testament prophets when they try, you know, like I think of Jonah. And Jonah tried to run away from God, right? He tried to get as far away from God's calling him to be a prophet as he could. And in some ways, I can't blame him because prophets did not have an easy time of it. And Jeremiah is one such example. He did not have an easy time of it. I mean, he's doing what God is telling him. His life is now at risk. The commentator goes on to say that that we will benefit in our reading, though, from remembering that the final shaping of the book of Jeremiah took place during the Babylonian exile. So the book offers a message for God's people as well as for God's prophet. So right now, Jeremiah is telling the people what is to come, the judgment that is to come. But later, the final shaping of the book took place during the exile. So that's a different way of, it's a different perspective, right? Let's talk more about this. We do have to take our first break of the podcast, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this text from Jeremiah, and then we'll start looking at the Psalm assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
The GSMC Bible Study Podcast. So what I was saying before the break was that this part of Jeremiah is talking about the impending judgment, but that the final maybe writing, editing, putting together or shaping of the book, it could have been oral. I don't know exactly how it was recorded. I should have looked that up, but that final process actually came during the Babylonian exile. So there's a slightly probably different perspective when you're telling the story of the judgment, but from the point that it's already happened. The exile has already happened. The destruction of Jerusalem and the temple has already happened. I'm not sure if I'm making sense. I'm trying to say something and I don't think it's coming out right. But we'll go back to the commentary at any rate. So taken in the context of Jeremiah 11, then verse 18 at first seems to be Jeremiah 11 as a whole. Then verse 18 at first seems to be a continuation of what God has been saying to Jeremiah throughout the chapter. The people's rebellion against God has gotten so bad and the judgment has become so inevitable that the Lord has even barred Jeremiah from interceding on the people's behalf. That's in 11:14. How crazy is that, right? You're a prophet. You're supposed to be warning of impending judgment. And the people's reaction has gotten so bad. The people's rebellion against God has gotten so bad that God says, you know what? No. I know I told you to warn them, but no, now you're not even allowed to intercede on their behalf. In the two verses immediately preceding 18, God says to the people of Judah and Jerusalem, the Lord once called you a green olive tree, fair with goodly fruit, but with the roar of a great tempest, he will set fire to it and its branches will be consumed. The Lord of hosts who planted you has pronounced evil against you because of the evil that the house of Israel and the house of Judah have done, provoking me to anger by making offerings to Baal. So at first glance, when Jeremiah says in verse 18, it was the Lord who made it known to me, and I knew, then you showed me their evil deeds. It seems that evil deeds refers to the rebellion that God has addressed throughout the chapter to this point. And so if you did take the time to go read through the entire chapter, you'll know, you'll have seen examples of those evil deeds, etc. So now, he says that verse 18 is revelation, verse 19 is realization. It turns out, though, that some of the people's evil deeds are directed at Jeremiah personally. This news takes the prophet by surprise. His assertion that he was like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter seems to be explained by his further statement, "And I did not know it was against me that they devised schemes." Jeremiah emphasizes his unawareness of people's plots against him. Poor Jeremiah. I always feel so bad for Jeremiah. Earlier in the chapter, God told Jeremiah, "Conspiracy exists among the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." That was in chapter 11, verse 9. The Lord goes on to describe the conspiracy as involving turning away from the covenant and to other gods. Now Jeremiah learns that people are also conspiring against him. The specific plot against the Lord's prophet is part of the general conspiracy against the Lord. Things are a mess, right? The people of Judah and Jerusalem, they're just, I don't know. I don't know if it's teenage rebellion. Obviously, they're adult, you know, they're people of all age. But, you know, I don't know if it's like teenage kind of rebellion against God or what is going on in the collective mindset of the Israelites at this time. But they are overwhelmingly rebelling against God. That doesn't mean everybody's rebelling against God, but the general consensus seems to be a rebellion against God. And that involves a plot against Jeremiah because he is trying to talk to them about the consequences of their actions, right? And generally, people don't want to hear that. Most of the time, sometimes you can talk about the consequences for people's actions and it will actually turn them in a different direction, maybe change their path. And a lot of other times it just makes them more determined, you know, fine. It's kind of that shoot the messenger thing. Fine. You bring us this news. We don't need you. We're going to continue on this path. So, the people's plot against Jeremiah seeks a devastating outcome. Let us destroy the tree with its fruit. Let us cut him off from the land of the living so that his name will no longer be remembered implies a total elimination of Jeremiah's life and legacy. They are not happy with Jeremiah, and they're going to do everything they can to just wipe him and his memory or his legacy off the face of the earth. The truly shocking news that the Lord reveals to Jeremiah is that those out to get him are the residents of his hometown. So he says Jesus was hardly the first prophet to find no honor in his hometown. Still, it's particularly painful to learn that those who have known you the longest are your harshest critics and most committed opponents. I come from a very small town in Montana. It's about 1,000 people, and I'm just trying to picture this, you know, my hometown turning against me. They've known me. I lived there my entire life until college. And, you know, I've been back numerous times. My parents still live there. My brother and nieces still live there. I'm just trying to imagine this town that I've known so intimately my whole life now has turned against me for what I believe is right. And I can really empathize with Jeremiah, obviously not to the extent of Jeremiah, but wow, that's crazy. The commentator refers to chapter 20 as resolution. So Jeremiah 11, 18 through 20 contains one of Jeremiah's many laments. He says we will profit from reading the others and from reading some of the laments in the Psalms. And we have talked about laments before. Interestingly, Leslie Allen points out that the text has elements of a psalm of thanksgiving, and that is from Jeremiah in the Old Testament Library, author Leslie C. Allen. Jeremiah is grateful that God has let him know of the threat against him, but what God has notified him of is cause for lament. I can understand that, right? He's lamenting because of the news that he has received, but he's also grateful. Forewarned is forearmed, right? This closing verse of our passage is typical of laments. Jeremiah has committed his cause to the Lord, and he asks God to bring justice to those who want to destroy him. It's important to note a couple of things. So first, Jeremiah leaves judgment in God's hands and doesn't try to execute it himself. How many of us, you know, wow, that takes some patience isn't exactly the right word for that, but that takes a lot of effort, I think, sometimes to leave judgment in God's hands, to not, I mean, this is his life that's a danger at risk, right? And yet he leaves it up to God. He trusts God enough, even though he's lamenting what's going on. Second, keeping in mind the canonical shaping of the book of Jeremiah, this becomes a prayer of God's people who trust that God is working God's purposes out and will do justice. So just as Jeremiah trusts God and leaves that judgment to God, then this verse becomes a prayer of God's people. Those, you know, not the ones that are rebelling against God, no, for the ones who are trusting that God is working, that God's purposes will win out and will do justice. So we might keep in mind also that Jeremiah was certain he was in the right, and history has revealed that to be the case. We should take care in making such assumptions, but we can trust God to do true justice in the long run. Basically, you know, Jeremiah was right. We have to be careful when we are insistent upon our rightness, but we can always trust that God will do true justice in the long run. We have to trust that God's plan might be, you know, the long game might be longer than what we're seeing at the moment, but, and so while we may feel right, we have to remember that God is the only one who is always right, if that makes sense. So I'm going to stop there and take our second break of the podcast. And then when we come back, we'll be turning to the psalm assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We have been talking about Jeremiah, chapter 11, verses 18 through 20, but now it's time to turn our attention to the psalm assigned for this week, and that is Psalm 54 in its entirety. It's only 7 verses. So those verses are as follows. Save me, O God, by your name, and vindicate me by your might. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth. For the insolent have risen up against me, the ruthless seek my life. They do not set God before them. But surely God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. He will repay my enemies for their evil. In your faithfulness put an end to them. With a free will offering I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. That is Psalm 54, seven verses of Psalm 54 in its entirety. And this makes a lot of sense why it goes with the Jeremiah text, don't you think? I mean, the insolent have risen up against me. The ruthless seek my life. They do not set God before them. Mm-hmm. But then there's the trusting of God. God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. So this is a lament psalm, because a psalm, you know, save me, O God. It's a request for help. And then, as often is the case, psalms often follow specific patterns. So there is the cry for help, the save me, O God, the hear my prayer, the reason for that, because the insolent have risen up against me. But then there's always this element of trust and thanksgiving. Surely God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. And the trust of what the psalmist is trusting that God will do in this situation. And then there's thanksgiving. You know, I trust you, God. And so because I trust you, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks in your name, O Lord, for it is good. And it's seven verses, but it really does pack a lot of, it packs a lot of punch. So the commentary, excuse me, for Psalm 54 comes to us from Carl Jacobson, who is the senior pastor of the Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I love his picture. He's wearing a Nordic sweater. Appropriate. he says, perhaps you've heard that old saw, announcing your plans is a good way to hear God laugh, or something like that. I've always heard it slightly flipped around. You know, you want to make God laugh, make plans. If making plans of our own, presumably in the face of God's plans for us, is laughable, how about issuing commands to God, telling God the divine's own business in no uncertain terms? Who would dare to give God orders? Yet this is, in a sense, exactly what Psalm 54 does. I hadn't thought of it like that. So that's interesting. Did you hear it that way? Did you hear it in trust, or did you hear it as the psalmist giving commands? See, this is the amazing thing about God's word. We all hear it from the perspective that we're at. You know, there's all sorts of things in our lives that affect how we hear God's word. So I'm curious, how did you hear it? Did you hear it in a completely different way? Not the way I was talking about? Not the way Carl Jacobson was talking about? At any rate, he goes on to say that our psalm begins with a fourfold plea: save me, hear me, give ear to me. Each of these pleas are imperative verbs, and then the fourth, vindicate me, which in terms of tense is imperfect, but in content clearly works like an imperative. Okay, so that's where he's getting the imperatives. Save me, hear me, give ear to me, vindicate me. Kind of, do this, God. This is what you're going to do. So these quite literally command God's attention, response, and action. These imperative clauses form the introduction to the psalm and demand God's attention. And while some Hebrew language grammarians might call this particular use of the imperative a jussive, J-U-S-S-I-V-E, I don't know that word. That is really just a delicate way of labeling the act of giving orders to someone who outranks you. There you go. But enough grammar, he says. Why is God's attention and action commanded? Well, because the enemies of the psalmist, the insolent and the ruthless, have risen against him to tear him apart with their words. At issue here in Psalm 54 is speech. Speech directed to God in response to the vile slander of human beings. Notice the tension that is present in regards to the hearing of speech in the psalm. God is commanded to give ear, to listen, to pay attention to the psalmist's words, and perhaps at the same time to the false witness of the psalmist's enemies. It is almost as if the psalmist begs God, "Can you not hear the insolent and ruthless as they lie about me?" That the enemy's actions are speech-based seems clear in that the enemies are said to be rising against him, a reference most likely to the actions of witnesses in the gate of the community. Remember that a lot of things happened at the gate of the community. Communities were walled, and business transactions and judgment and a lot of things happened at the gate of the community. So apparently this is where they are gathering to call out their slurs, their slander against the psalmist. Notice also he says that the psalmist does not answer word for word those who falsely accuse him. Such a response is the fool's move. Implicit in the psalm is the sense that he said, they said doesn't get a person anywhere. Instead, the psalmist sets God before him, appealing to God to judge on his behalf, to find for the defense, if you will, and to reverse the judgment, pronouncing it against the psalmist's enemies. Indeed, before offering a pledge of thanksgiving, the psalmist exults in this reverse judgment, saying that God will repay my enemies for their evil, and that my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. The psalm, which may strike us as an odd selection for reading during worship, actually couches the whole conflict very much in terms of the worship life of the community. This may be at least in part what is meant by the idea of putting God before oneself, which the psalmist does and his enemies do not. It is only in the presence of God that the conflict will be appropriately resolved. In service of putting God before himself and at the same time putting his pleas before God, the psalmist employs several terms which are worship-related and technical. Isn't that fascinating? Okay, so the most important technical term used in the psalm comes toward the beginning of the psalm in verse 2. And it's probably, he says, the most innocuous of the worship-related terms in the psalm, at least at first blush. The psalmist offers a prayer. The psalmist calls his appeal a prayer. There are several different terms in the Old Testament for prayer, but the Hebrew word used here is by far the most common. What may be telling is that the word is probably related to the word which means judge. In a sense, then, prayer is in and of itself an appeal to God as judge. The psalmist directs his speech to God, the judge, who will speak in response to the false accusations of the psalmist's enemies. Psalm 54, he goes on to say, offers an intriguing, compelling image of the nature of prayer, one that will almost surely surprise many Christian prayers. Looking at the insights of the psalm can serve to inform both the nature and the appropriate direction of Christian speech. Because how many of us, when we think about praying appropriately, would think of ordering God around or praying to God as judge? Maybe we do. I don't know. But do we do it appropriately? Do we do it in the context of worship? I don't even know how to answer that. Psalm 54 speech in When confronted with false witnesses, with accusations meant to tear down and destroy reputations, self-image, and in due course lives, the psalm turns us not to rebuttal or reprisal, but to prayer in worship. For Psalm 54, speech in the midst of conflict is to be directed to God, not simply thrown back at those who falsely accuse. Furthermore, this speech is imperative in nature. It commands God to serve as judge on our behalf. That is what prayer is. And that, I think, is the heart of what we've just read. How often, of course, we want judgment. We want retribution, right? People are saying things and we want revenge. We want them to have, we want to be able to turn around and say some equivalent of, well, I know you are, but what am I? Or, you know, something really like that. But so you can turn to God and you can complain and you can say, these people are being mean to me and I don't like it. Or you can turn to God as judge, but in the context of worship, prayer and worship. And how would that change how we pray when it is about people that we might consider our enemies or that we consider to be against us? I don't have any good answers for that right now. In fact, that's where I'm going to leave you for this week, is to contemplate prayer in worship, prayer where you give it to God to be judge, but you actually leave it in God's hands. So it's, I mean, often when we say giving it to God to judge, we're expecting God to come out on our side, right? Or to say we're right. But what if we give it to God as an impartial judge, praying in the context of worship as children of God, as remembering that the people who are speaking against us are also children of God? That's a lot of stuff to think about, and I'm going to leave you with that for this week. So thank you so much for listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. Please join me again on Wednesday for the second part of this episode, and we'll talk about the readings from the New Testament, so the readings from James and the Gospel of Mark. Hope you're having a great weekend, and please, please remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.